Hi, this is Mark Talbot. I post a Zolt in a 20-foot radius.
Hi, this is Derek Myers. I post a Zamoron at DungeonsMaster.com. And welcome to our podcast, Recounting Encounters.
A show where we talk about what happened at D&D Encounters this week. Alright, everybody, welcome to D&D Encounters, Season 11, War of Everlasting Darkness, Session 6, Trolls of the Evermoors. This week, Derek and I discuss how to cut down your time on Session 6 if you managed to miss it like I did, or things that happened at the gaming table where Derek played as well as DM'd. Correct, Derek?
That's correct. I was fortunate enough to have both sides of the screen this week.
Excellent. So we'll talk a little bit about the adventure to start off with, and then after that we'll give you some tips as to what you can do in case you miss a session, in case you're falling behind. At this point we'll talk about some tips and stuff to shorten your combat so you can catch up.
This was a really long session. It's certainly the longest one that I've played or run this season. In fact, I think it's the longest one I've ever had for D&D Encounters. Although on average, this season has been longer every week anyway, but this one was particularly long if you ran it exactly as printed. So I think that the tips that we're going to discuss will be valuable not only for this D&D Encounters this session if you might be behind, or for the upcoming sessions, but just gaming in general. There's always ways that you can speed things up and cut out some of the unnecessary parts, maybe things that are a little bit less important.
Sounds good. But before we even get started in this, I know that you have a little message to give.
Yes, I want to take this opportunity. Actually, we want to take this opportunity to plug the new book, The Lazy DM. This is a self-published Dungeons and Dragons manual, guide, whatever you want to call it, that has been produced by Mike Shea of SlyFlourish.com. Mike Shea is a big member of the online gaming community and the public play gaming community. He's written for Wizards of the Coast. In fact, he is one of the authors of the last Lair Assault, Kill the Wizard, which, in my opinion, was the best one so far. Mike's credentials are outstanding, and his new book, The Lazy DM, is a lot of tips and tricks and, just basically like the title says, if you're a lazy DM and you want to run a game or bring a game back on track, or if you're having problems with your game, it's full of things that will help you. Whether you're currently a DM or you think you might want to be a DM, it is well worth the $5.99 that Mike's asking you to pay for the PDF of the book. You can visit his website, slyflourish.com, and purchase it directly from there. So good luck, Mike, and I encourage everyone to go pick that up.
Excellent. So that is slyflourish.com/lazydm/. There we go. So that's where
Excellent.
It is. Purchase it and enjoy.
Indeed.
All right. So, Derek, okay. Let's start talking about the adventure itself. So give me a little rundown on what you played. Where you played this week and how it went.
Okay. So, as I mentioned, this was a really long session, but we don't necessarily want this to be a really long podcast. So I'll try and keep to just the top higher points as much as I can. And I encourage you, Mark, to wrangle me in if I'm getting a little bit off topic.
Definitely.
So, excuse me. So first I was able to run this as the DM. As I mentioned before, I played two stores. So the first store, I ran it. At that store, we don't usually run under any time constraints. The people have a lot of time. They're there to just enjoy the game. And I don't usually make an extra effort to try and speed things along. If the players are having a good time with something, I encourage them and we let it go. The second time I went through this, I was a player and I had actually given the DM, I wasn't the DM. I given the DM a heads up that this could run really, really long. And he did a pretty good job of trying to, keep the players in line and keep them on track. And it still was a really long session. I know one of the other DMs at the second store where I play, he left the whole section out, which, Mark, I think you're going to talk on some of those tips down the road. But the first session that I ran, it took us about 3.5 hours start to finish. The second one, where I was the player, took us about 2 hours 45. Both stores we usually run between 1.5 to 2 hours. So just to give you an idea, it was a lot longer than usual.
Right. So now at the session 5, basically they went to the Fell Pass. fell past. They gathered some information. They found some plans for a troll army to start an attack on Silvery Moon. And basically, the last frontier, per se, is the town of Nesme, right? And that's where we start this week.
Yeah, and one of the things that I actually really like, well, I mean, I'll say up front, this was by far my favorite encounter that I've played in this season, and probably one of the ones that I've enjoyed the most since encounters started. And that's high praise, I think.
It's so original. I mean, I can't wait to play it myself.
Yeah, I had such a great time, and I was really looking forward to this one. So I was glad that it sort of lived up to my expectations. But one of the things that I really liked was it starts off with action. It's like a James Bond movie. Like, you get that first boom, here's a whole bunch of action, and then the story slows down a little bit while the players catch their breath, and they move on to another section of the adventure, and then towards the end, boom, more combat. But the fact that right out of the gate, boom, here's two trolls, go, was great. It's not something that we've had this season with D&D Encounters yet, and it really put the players in the right mindset. It got them excited. It presented the realistic capabilities of these trolls. The trolls had over 100 hit points. They were level 9 brutes. They hit hard. They had high defenses. They had lots of hit points. They regenerated if you didn't hit them with fire or acid. So this was a tough fight right off the bat. And, you know, a lot of the players in my group, they used a couple of daily powers. They used a couple action points in the first fight because they needed to. Like, this was a big deal. And, in my opinion, was a really great way to start. But
now, did your players discover at the first table, were they experienced enough to know that trolls are actually affected by fire and acid?
As players, they knew that. I had them make nature checks, monster knowledge checks right off the bat. And one of the characters rolled high enough to know that. So I told them, I'm like, I know you guys as players know that, but now your characters actually would have that information. Unfortunately, none of them had fire. None of them had acid. And so they were basically forced to just keep bringing these trolls down to negative hit points long enough and fast enough that they could, you know, pull a torch out of their pack, light it up, and do it the old-fashioned way. But, it was a good fight. It was a tough fight. It presented the players with some tactics. Like, basically, it was a learning experience for them.
Right.
Yeah, they defeated the monsters, but at what cost? How much of their own personal resources did they need to take down two trolls, so that later in the encounter, when they faced trolls again, they had a better gauge of how tough the trolls were going to be, and they could, you know, they were armed with knowledge now of what can we do to make this better.
Well, it's a good thing this time, because, like you mentioned before or prior to starting this recording, these characters kind of knew right from the start that if there's a battle right away, there's something coming after. So it seems like they kind of moderated their resources this time, and it seems like it was advantageous to them at the end anyway.
Yeah, the group where I was a player, there were the resource output was a lot less. We had three characters that were able to attack from range and two melee characters. So the two melee characters, one of which was a defender, they basically were able to lock down the two trolls pretty well. And yeah, those two characters took a lot of damage, but the three range characters took no damage. And so that helped considerably. And the characters from range, none of them used daily powers. So when we finally did a second combat later in the evening, they had a lot left. But to your point, the fact there was a fight right off the bat, the players knew that this wasn't it. Like, in previous seasons, they show up, they get a fight right off the bat, the fight takes an hour, they're done.
Right.
And that was the way it was designed. With this season, after 5 weeks of this, they realized that just because there's a fight at the beginning, and yeah, it's tough, it's against two trolls, doesn't mean that this is it. And I like that the players, their expectations have been set now that there's going to be more than one fight.
Good learning curve.
Yeah, very much so. And I think it successfully puts them in the right mindset that future seasons of Encounters can build on this, that players are starting to learn. It's not just show up, sit down, fight monsters, go home. And I mean, some players are still going to want to do that, but the adventure doesn't need to be designed that way.
It only took 11 seasons to change that.
Yeah, exactly.
So basically you defeat these trolls, then once again you kind of look at Nesme, you see it off in the distance, and you know In this case, it kind of gives you a prompt, and it kind of spoon feeds you some stuff. So I know you changed that up a little bit. You made the players work for their money, but you're supposed to speak with the first speaker, Thorid Cyborg, and get a whole whack of information. So, yeah.
Yeah, the idea here, you get the reload text after the fight, and it basically says, yeah, well, you guys were busy fighting these two trolls. There were a couple other trolls that got past you, and the town eventually, the town's defenses, the archers on the wall, the siege weapons, they were able to defeat these trolls. But the heroes look around and they're like, my God, man, these guys suck. The archers couldn't hit anything. The catapults weren't working. There was no cavalry. It's like, what the heck's going on here? So when they go into the town, they talk to the first speaker, who I just kept calling the mayor because I couldn't remember first speaker. And although the first speaker has this information, I made the players, well, the characters anyway, I made them work for it a little bit. I made them, make some diplomacy checks and do a little bit streetwise. Like, it wasn't just they walk in and the mayor's like, hey, guess what? We need your help, and here's where you can do, and blah, 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 blah. I'm like, give them a chance, give them the benefit of the doubt that they can learn that on their own, and they did.
Very cool. Next, depending on how you played it, I don't know how your tables played it, but after getting this information dump and spoon-fed this silver information, you get a magic item.
Yeah, well, you might.
It depends on the DM once again, but in the adventure, this is how it's played, so.
Yeah, with my first group, I did that. Once they befriended the mayor, he offered them this magic item, especially because the players actively activated the light items during the fight with the troll. They used the light power on the wand to illuminate the area. Not that they needed it, a lot of them had dark vision. But after last week's fight against the shades, where they didn't do it, or when they turned it on and the shades were weakened, they figured, you know what? It only takes a minor action to turn it on. It'll illuminate the whole map. From now on, we're going to illuminate every map every time because, hey, why not? So I worked it into that. I'm like, the mayor saw you use this. He's like, hey, we have this item that sort of does the same thing. And so they handed it over to them
And
with
the darkening was the reason the sharpshooters were not hitting, because the sharpshooters are pretty sharp, actually.
But they're human. They can't see in the dark for the
Right,
most part.
correct.
I think there were a couple of half elves or elves in their group, but it's yeah, that's basically why they're no good, is they can't see what they're shooting at.
Right.
So with my second group, where I was the player, I mean, it's tough to separate the player knowledge from the character knowledge. Like, as the DM, I've already run this encounter. I know what needs to be done, what the checks are, what the monster stats are. So I have to be, a little bit careful as the player, not to be, oh, well, we go here and we make this check. Oh, look, we find something cool. So I said to the DM didn't give us this magic item. And I asked him afterwards. I said, hey, I'm just curious why you didn't introduce that into the group. And he's like, well, a couple of reasons. He goes, number one, there were no divine characters in the party, so holy item wouldn't have helped you at all. I was like, okay, I'll give you that. And secondly, he said during the role playing, nobody talked about going to a church. Nobody asked if there was a priest. Nobody said, I'm going to go to the church and make a donation. And nothing. It never came up in the role playing. They all talked about going to the tavern and, finding some wenches. And, he said, they were very specific about where they were going, but nobody said the church. And he's like, in my opinion, since they didn't bring it up, I didn't feel it was necessary to throw it in. And I got to say, that's a great idea. I wish I thought of that when I ran it. So.
What are
But at the end,
wenches? Tools used to fix the catapults, or what?
yeah, for sure.
Welcome.
Family show, family show. Yeah, and then obviously the item is important to the bigger story. So at the end, he gave it to the party. But again, the party sort of went, yeah, whatever. Which, because that he knew that was going to be our reaction, he didn't give it out right away, and I think that was the right choice.
Well, I mean, how many light symbols do we actually have in for each party member now?
Think there's five now.
Yeah, I think we're up to five and plus
Potion, the potion, the poppet, the
wand
wand,
and the two tiers.
The shield, and the holy item that you just got.
Yeah, so the two helms. Yeah, so that's like five or six.
Five, yeah, and there's one more coming up because I know online on the forums there's a page you can print up. It's got the six items. You can cut them out and hand it out the little cards to the players. So
Right, right, right.
I have one left in my DM page, in my DM folder. So
Cool.
six altogether, five already handed out. So.
So next we go to now basically the task is you get assigned to you figure out that there's certain parts that need to be fixed up. Basically, the town has to be fixed up. So there's four things that you have to do. So basically, you have to talk to the riders in Esme, you have to fix the catapults, fix the sharpshooters, and fix a town watch. So how'd you manage that? Did they go together or did they separate?
Well, there's actually one other thing you can do, reconnaissance. So there were, I guess, five things you could do. Yeah, so again, let me take another step back here. Here's another thing I really, really liked about this week's encounter. They have the battle value mechanic. Apparently, this is not new. This has been used in one of the previous pre-printed adventures. Honestly, I haven't played any of those ones, so I didn't know. But I think for most people, this will be new. And essentially, this is a way for the players, this is a way for the DM to describe what is happening in this town in the areas where the players aren't. So at the end of the day, when the actual fight and the siege of the town happens, the players can only be in one place and they can only affect one little small area directly. What happens to the rest of the town? So during the course of the role playing, the characters can help increase the battle value of the town. The higher the battle value, the better the outcome in all those areas of the town where the players are not actively, running their characters. So, as you had said, that we've got these different options they can do, and each one takes a certain amount of time, and each one can increase the battle value of the town.
So basically, long and short, the more you increase it, the better prepared the town will be for the troll invasion.
Yeah, absolutely. And for the DM at the end, there's basically three options depending on where your score falls. It's like if it's under a certain number, the heroes are not able to get the defenses up and the town falls. The heroes, the heroes probably don't get killed, but there's nowhere for them to go after the fight. They got to run away. The second one is sort of somewhere in the middle. A lot of the town got destroyed, but you defeated most of the trolls. Some of them might have got past, so there may still be a threat, but you did a pretty decent job. And then the final one is just, you were awesome. You bolstered this town. They turned the tide. They killed the trolls. No one got past. Hooray, hooray. You guys are awesome.
Battle of Helm's Deep right there.
Yeah. There was a lot of Lord of the Rings references used tonight. I mean, the first one here is the Riders of Nesmi. We kept calling them the Riders of Rohan because, we're nerds, and that's the first thing that came to mind. Riders of fill in the blank. Well, Rohan. Yes, we got it. So somebody actually suggested that the show Sons of Anarchy. Apparently, they were calling this section the Sons of Nesmi because the political happenings in the adventure apparently mirror what's happening in the Sons of Anarchy TV show right now. I'm like, I don't watch it, so I don't know, but a lot of people on the forums were talking about that, and they're like, yeah, it's like they just copied it right out of the show. So I don't know if that was the case, just
Hey,
coincidence.
you take your creative knowledge from you pull it from where you can, right?
Absolutely. I steal from TV all, I mean borrow from TV all the time when I run my games.
Nice.
So, without getting into too much detail, you've got these different objectives, you've got a certain amount of time, and each one can increase the battle value. And depending on your level of success, certain ones, the battle value can increase a little bit or a lot. Some of the objectives you can try more than once. So, for example, with the siege engines, they have broken catapults. It requires 3 days of work. And at the end of the 3 days, you do some test shots, and either, yeah, they work, your battle value increases, or, oh crap, they didn't work, we got to start again. You get a retry. With the example of the riders, they've got a rift in their leadership. The leader's been accused of a crime, but some of the men are still loyal to him. The new upstart guy who's making the accusations is got the loyalty of some of the new guys. But neither side is willing to come together to, be adult about it and defend the town. So, you can come in and try and bridge the gap. And depending on who you put in place, you can support one of the two dudes, or you can possibly suggest a third option. The battle value would increase depending on your level of
Now, I
success.
really like this. I read through this whole Riders of Nesmi thing, and I really, really like the fact that you can either give him up and basically put the other guy in his place, back the guy, and then put the upstart in his place, or basically just call for a general vote and put somebody absolutely new in their place. And I thought that was fantastic.
Yeah, and with my group, the group I ran it with, I had both leaders make strong cases for why they were right. And I had both leaders basically say, if I'm not in charge, this will fall apart. and the characters never for a second even thought about putting somebody else in charge. And so at the end, when they backed one guy or the other, we made the checks, they rocked it, no problem. You got him. I'm like, oh, the other guy gets so angry, he leaves and he takes two or three of his best men with him. But you got enough guys to defend the town. They said after, they're like, oh, you know, what else could we have done? And I said, well, you could have suggested a totally new guy. And they're like, we never even thought of that.
Who'd they back? Your first table, who'd they back?
Varen. They backed the main guy. I really played him up. I'm like, he's been in charge for 20 years. I'm like, he's clearly the commander. I go, you know, you don't know what's going on. It's this young upstart. It tells you what the evidence. And even when I presented the evidence to them, they're like, yeah, well, you know what? Given the circumstances, let's forgive him for 9 days until the stuff happens. So they made a strong case for him. And they failed their insight checks, so they didn't realize that he was sort of – they knew he was hiding some details, but they didn't really know what. And at the point, they were like, we don't care. He's clearly the guy in charge. We're backing him.
And your second table? Like,
okay. Second table, the DM gave us a little bit more coaching, and he sort of suggested up front that there was a third option. And once he did that, the players were pretty keen on that idea. Again – I intentionally was a little bit of a shit disturber because I knew what was coming. I tried to play the devil's advocate with this one and sort of coax the party in the opposite direction of their initial instinct just to get them thinking about the other side. I like to think it worked at least enough to get them to role play both sides of the coin before they sort of went, okay, we're going to do this.
Very cool. And this one here required 1 day and no retries, but it did increase the battle value by 2 if you managed to actually get them settled.
You could have brought it up. Its starting value, I think, was started at 2.
It started at 2, yeah.
Bring it up to 3, 4, or 5, depending on the outcome. So you got different levels of success depending on which way you went. But yeah, to your point, this was not one you could try more than once. You got one kick at this, and if you didn't do it right or you didn't get the outcome you wanted, too bad.
So then we had the sharpshooters.
Yeah, the sharpshooters, as we said, they couldn't see in the dark. So really the way to help them was to get the lights on, which you could do by using the Wand of Treelin to essentially mimic what Axelkranz had done last week, and where he was able to break the darkening over the Fell Pass. You could try and do the same thing over Nesmi in order to give the archers clear line of sight. Again, I wasn't wild about the way that this was just sort of presented. Like this wasn't something that any of the characters got on their own. I had to tell them. I'm like, here's another option. They realized they needed to try and create light sources, but using the wand in this way was not something that they anticipated on their own. I think what might have helped is at the end of last week's, if Axelkranz might have given them a little bit of direction in the narrative, something along the lines of, oh, wow, that worked. Fantastic. If we ever have to do that again, here's what you need to do. You know, just a little 2 sentences in the last week's thing might have been enough that the characters this week could have gone, well, Axelkranz indicated this was something we could try. And then that way they'd be off to the races. In the session I ran and in the session I played, the DM had to spoon feed this to the party to say, here's your best option. And I really didn't see a way around it at that point. And in both cases, it took a couple of checks, but the party was able to do it in the end.
Well, what you can do, maybe they could have just put it in the description of the Wand of Tirlin, the activation of the power. So basically they say any character with an arcane, what was it here? Arcane nature or religion, anybody trained in that can use it to illuminate a very large area of bright light.
Yeah, basically permanently dispel the darkening in limited areas.
Correct.
I really liked that you could use these skills, but you had to be trained and you had to be a certain power source. So it's like nature trained and primal power, mm-hmm. religion trained and divine power. And for Arcana, obviously not all arcane characters are the arcane power source. So it just specified non-martial power source. So I thought that was a really good idea. I mean, I personally, my home games, I do a lot of things where if you're not trained in it, I don't let you try. And I thought it was a nice breath of fresh air to actually see the creators of this encounter put that little detail in there. And in our group, the group where I played, we actually had a problem with that because the warlock, who is an arcane character, wasn't trained in Arcana. And he tried this. He basically wasted a day. And at the end of the day, he made the roll. He actually failed the role, but the DM said, you realize the reason you failed the role is because you don't have the training required. And we sort of went, oh crap, well, who does? So we had a bard and we had a ranger who both could try it. The bard got it on the second try. So We got it in the end. But this was one of those ones. You could keep trying it, and the various levels of success provided different benefits. So.
Nice. So then we had the town watch. So basically, it's 3 days. There were three tasks that you had to do. So you can recruit volunteers, give them some physical training, and basically get them moraled up for the fight to come.
Yeah, and each task took 3 days, and each task would increase the battle value of the town, and each task required slightly different skills depending on what you were doing and how you wanted to do it. Again, this one was good for role playing. It used a little bit more variety in the skill set, but it took 3 days. You could retry it, but 3 days is a long time. So if you did 3 days and failed it, and you want to spend another 3 days doing the same thing, that eats up most of your time. So.
Right. And the last one that we have here, which is kind of like a side, it has nothing to do with the town per se, but it has to do with the battle, is the reconnaissance part. So that requires 1 day. Now you modified it in a way that was maybe more conducive to your table.
Yeah, well, first, there were four different areas of this thing that you could recon, and each one required 1 day. So potentially, if it would require 4 days to get all the information. What I did is okay. So let me back up for a second. The recon required a stealth check. Basically, if your guy was quiet, could get out there and watch. All he had to do was be quiet, and over the course of the day, he was there long enough to see what he needed to see, depending on where he was stationed around the camp. So you didn't have to make perception checks. You didn't have to make any checks to interpret what you saw. It was just assumed. I've been there 24 hours. I've seen enough to know what's happening. The check was a DC 11, which for most characters you couldn't fail that. If you were a dex-based character and you were a character that was trained in stealth, you couldn't fail this check because you get plus half your level. So if you were a rogue, a ranger, a monk, an assassin. Anything that was dex based, where you had 16, 18, 20, some characters had over a 20 in that check. You're rolling on a plus four, plus five for your skill or for your ability score, plus five for the training, plus three for half your level. You can't fail that check. So for the two groups I was involved with, as well as the two other tables at my store, every group, one guy who was awesome in stealth went to do the recon by himself. Which was great, but dangerous. I knew as the DM he couldn't fail the check, but he didn't know that. Had he failed that check, the trolls come out and fight you. And depending on how badly you fail the check, you get more trolls. And I gotta be honest, I don't know. There are very few sixth level characters that can stand up to a troll, a level 9 brute troll, and kill it. Unless you're a guy who has a lot of fire magic, forget it. You're done. And the trolls have speed 8, so it's not even like you can outrun them. But assuming you made the checks, which they're going to, you spend your 4 days, you get the information, and you increase the battle value of the town by one for each day you stay out there because you learn something new that can help you, put your defenses in their most advantageous position.
Right, you learn where the trolls are going to be, where they think they're going to attack, and when they're going to attack. So you're basically
Yes.
pretty much ready.
Yeah. What I did was, number one, I made my guy make a stealth check as he approached the camp. That was the DC 11. Then each time you move to a different area, I increase the DC by 2. Now, my rationale for that was, every day he's there, there's a greater chance someone, because obviously, this is a big army, they're going to have patrols. Someone in the wandering patrol will find him. So every day he's got to move somewhere new so he doesn't get discovered. But he's moving somewhere new because he wants to learn this information anyway. And then he had asked me at one point, he's like, well, can I take what I've learned, go back, and then spend the night in a bed, and then come back the next day and learn more stuff? And I'm like, you absolutely can do that. But I told him, I'm going to make the stealth checks harder each time you go and come back. Because again, you've got to outmaneuver these patrols, and they're going to be actively looking for you. The more you come and go, the more likely someone's going to get lucky and see you. So the dude just decided to stay out there for the 4 days. And again, even by the end, I think what was it? Starts at 11. I pumped it by 2 each time. His last check was a 19. I think he was rolling on a 16 anyway. So like it was practically impossible for to fail those checks. But it was a lot of fun. And with the group where I was the player, the guy who was the recon guy was playing a drow, and he like was trying to infiltrate the camp and pretend he was one of the drow soldiers, and he wanted to sneak into the captain's tent to try and learn more info. It really encouraged a lot of role playing from characters that don't often get the spotlight in the role playing side of it. So it was a lot of fun.
Very cool. And then comes the battle for Nesmi.
Yeah, by this point, it becomes an exercise in counting the numbers. What was the battle value at the start? How many battle value points have you accumulated along the way? And then you have the fight. Now, as we mentioned before, the whole town is being attacked by trolls and by the drow. And the characters can't be everywhere at once. So the characters have the choice of either engaging the trolls before they get into the town or engaging them just as they get over the wall. Both groups I played with chose to do it in town. We figured we would be able to control the trolls' movements a little better because the houses would have been tougher obstacles than the trees. And that helped in both cases.
Narrows the playing field a lot.
It really, really does. Now, the characters are supposed to face four trolls. And in my mind, a way that this could have been improved was started off with a certain number of trolls, maybe four. And then depending on the battle value, I would adjust that number. So if their battle value is really high, reduce the number of trolls. Or say that the trolls that got through took some arrows to the face or took a hit from the catapult. So yeah, you're facing four trolls, but they're at, you know, 3/4 hit points because they've already taken some damage. Or, you know, the trolls suffer a -2 to their armor class because they're limping. They took some arrows to the side. Or, you know, you make up some sort of little benefit that'll, again, reward the players for all this good role-playing to get the battle value up.
Right.
In the two groups I played with and the other two groups running in the stores, everybody got the highest. You needed to get up to a 21 or better. Given that there were 9 days to do these tasks, unless the party stayed together the whole time, you're going to get this number. The groups I was with, they split up. All the tables had guys split up. If your party splits up and is even marginally decent at the skills required, it's going to be impossible to come in under 21. You're going to save the town.
Right. So long and short, this adventure was made technically for role-playing, to become real heroes. You came in, you swept this town off its feet, and defended against the troll horde.
Yeah, and I think most of the players that were there tonight in both stores felt that this was a really fun night. They got to do a lot. They got to use their skills. They got to use their powers. They got to go through and use their dailies. They really felt that the battle was significant. The fights were meaningful and the fights were challenging. Like, you know, you fight 2 level 9 trolls at the beginning and 4 level 9 trolls at the end. And without that rest in between, like even though 9 days have passed in game, the characters don't get the benefits of the shorter extended rest. I mean, it's tough. If your characters took a lot of heat in that first fight, that second fight is going to be really tough.
Well, this reminds me of I played the published adventures, and I actually DM'd Trolls Troll Haunt Warren, and it reminds me exactly of that. The town map that you get is from the Troll Haunt Warrens, yeah, the initial one is basically you fight an Oni mage with 4 trolls also. But at this point, you're like 11th level characters, so I can imagine how, you know, the toughness. You have to be tough for this one.
Yeah, I think this was an encounter. The second part, anyway, was definitely an encounter designed to demonstrate the value and importance of balance in the party. A party with a good controller, a party with a good defender, we're going to have a lot easier time at it. In my first group, they had a controller, and they had no defender. And the controller was pretty good. He managed to slow down and immobilize the trolls at the beginning so they didn't have to fight all 4 at once. And that helped a lot. But when the monsters started making their saving throws and the controller ran out of stuff to really stop them, it was heavy going. With my second group, they had a defender, and he was awesome. He took a ton of damage, but he was able to lock down that troll. So again, 2 trolls came in, boom, locked the first one down, and everybody else focused fire on the other troll, and boom, the troll fell in 3 rounds, 4 rounds. So parties that didn't have that balance were going to find it really tough. I mean, in neither group I played with had fire magic or acid magic, so that posed some significant challenges. But I talked to the guys at the other table. They had a wizard, and he had a couple of big firepower. He had a fireball as his level 5 daily, and he had something else. I think he had an at will that was fire, or a low level encounter power that was fire. And they were like, yeah, this guy just rocked. Every time he hit it, it burned. It didn't regen. It fell down. It never got up.
Right.
So some party balance really made a huge difference this week.
Well, I've always found that. I've always found that party balance is good, and there's nothing like a good defender to lock down the battlefield. They're a pain in the rear end when it gets, you know, when you get the Paragon or Epic, but, you know, at this level, they're fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, believe me, I've played my share of games where it's five strikers, and that's a ton of fun, but it gets boring, and you there are going to be things that you're not going to be able to do as well with five strikers as you are with balanced party, and an encounter like the one we played tonight really highlights that.
Very cool.
So, as I mentioned, these encounters went really long. My first group was 3.5 hours. My second group was 2:45. And with the second group, the DM actually only had two instead of four trolls come at us at the end. And had he had the full four trolls, we would have easily gone over 3 hours. So, Mark, I know you didn't get a chance to play this, but you and I talked a little bit and you had given it some thought because obviously you've got to make up a week here with your group. What do you think? How can we trim this down?
Well, number one, I find that at this level, combat starts to get tedious. So listening to yourself and listening to the forum itself or look and read the community, a lot of people had a lot of fun with this. Some people had some suggestions, what they could do, etc. I find that maybe you can avoid combat entirely, depending on your group. If your group loves to roleplay, you can have some sort of skill combat. You can have some sort of basically run in. Don't do the trolls. Do a lot of reconnaissance, do a lot of role play, get through this very quickly. That's one way. Another way, maybe choose one of the combats. I mean, four trolls at the end, after you've done all that role playing, like you said, Derek, you're going, what, 3.5, 3 hours and all that kind of stuff. And hey, you know, you've got to limit what you can. I've got to get ahead. I've got to do this podcast and I got to be able to say, hey, I played this or that, or I skipped session six in total, which I don't want to do.
Yeah, back to your first point there, with one of the tables at the second store where I was playing, the other DM, after it was about 2 hours and 15 minutes, they finished all their role play, and he's like, the trolls are approaching and the battle's about to start. The DM just made the call. He's like, I'm not going to have them fight these trolls at the end. And he basically just narrated, this is what happens. And the players thought it was great. They didn't feel cheated because they had that really good fight at the beginning. And because their battle value was so high, the town was defended. And, you know, the DM made a point of narrating the heroics of the heroes and how their efforts made the big difference. And the players walked away going, wow, that was really good. I like the way that ended. Like, they didn't feel like, oh, man, I want to fight more trolls. I didn't get to use all my powers. So I think your suggestion to potentially cut that out is a good one. I think it's one that you can do and still have a satisfied party.
Exactly. The other one is avoid a lot of retries. Basically, do it or don't, kind of like put them under pressure. And one of the ways that you don't do the retries is, you had suggested this earlier, and I think that's a really good idea, is narrowing it down from 9 to 6 or 9 yes. to 4 days and just take it easy on the number of days, because eventually you can get bored, the players can get bored, or you put them under the gun.
Yeah, I think a couple of things. I like the idea of bringing it down from 9 days to 6. I think 6 is still good enough because a couple of, like, the catapults is a huge thing. If they don't get those catapults up, the number is way down from where it needs to be for them to be successful. And that makes sense. I mean, catapults firing flaming balls at armies of trolls, like, that's going to make a huge difference. You can retry that one, and it takes 3 days. So if you bring it down from 9 to 6, they get 2 tries at that. And I think that's fair. I think if they haven't got it by the second time, too bad. You suck at that. Like, you got to find somewhere else you can put your resources.
Exactly. And the last one would be to just avoid the whole first part of it. You fight the trolls, you go into town, and basically get a character to do a history check, nature check, dungeoneering check, or whatever check the DM decides. And basically, you can avoid the whole first part having to speak to the first speaker. Right? Spoon feeding the information, make the characters work for it. Make them work for it by actually going directly into the assets. Right? So yeah. They see the catapults, they walk up to the dudes in the catapults and go, holy geez, man, your catapults look awful. Here, let me give you a hand. Right? Maybe just brief introduction to the what do you call that guy? First speaker of the town. But something really brief. You can avoid that whole conversational part by adding some of the information, like you said, make them work for it, but actually do it while they're doing the assets. So instead of just being like, help this, help that, do a couple of skill checks, learn some information.
I got the impression, at, like, again, after I read it and played it and ran it, the more I thought about it, the more I was like, you know what? This town almost seemed to me like it should be a town of children. Like, the players arrive, and it's like the oldest kid in the town is like 15. All the adults have been killed defending the town, and now it's just the kids. And that's why the bow and arrows were missing. The kids just lack experience. And I think that that might have really changed the mood of the characters. It would have almost given them an air of confidence before they made any checks. And to your point, rather than have the mayor come out and go, oh, here's the problem, you know, they're like, holy crap, this town's run by kids. And then they immediately want to learn more. Well, where are the adults? Who is in charge here? Oh, well, you know, there's the guys who are in the riders. There's the guy who's the head of the archers, that, you know, and then that sort of forces them to move to those asset sections of the adventure right away. I wish I had come up with, we should do this podcast a week earlier, and then I could have had these ideas.
Well, if they'd send it to us a bit earlier, we can skip session zero to start off with and actually get 2 weeks ahead so we can plan what we're going to say for the next week.
Well, we don't want to go down that road. Wizards has already repeatedly asked us to make sure that we're only playing on Wednesdays, and certainly we don't want to encourage people to play outside of the normal cycle, because technically, you know, the Wizards public play, they can reprimand the stores if they're not following the rules. So for those people listening from Wizards, we are following the rules. And from those people listening from the stores, don't do anything you're not supposed to, because we wouldn't want you to lose your public play stuff just because you heard us suggest you should play off cycle.
Oops.
Yeah. Don't worry. We're all cool here.
Yeah, we're all good.
Yep. The one of the other things that occurred to me was rather than reduce it by 9 days is – instead of giving in a fixed number, have maybe a role, like the trolls need 4 or 5 days to do something. And after that point, you roll. And it's like, if they haven't made it by the 9th day, they attack. They're going to make it by day 9. It will happen. And then that way, maybe the guy doing the recon realizes, oh my God, they're trying to get this thing together. And it gives that guy doing the recon a chance to extend the amount of time that the players have to prep the town. Rather than just, you make a stealth check, you go out, hey, look, this is what's happening. And it might encourage that guy to, after he's done some stealth, to go back to the town and say, hey, I need to bring a couple of you guys with me. And it doesn't necessarily matter that you're not that quiet. This is going to be more important than being quiet. So, again, it would make the encounter a little longer, I think. I don't think it would solve our problem of cutting out the time, but it might make things a little more interesting.
One other thing that would be interesting also is, how about having counter reconnaissance to their reconnaissance. So get some of those troll infiltrators to actually come into town and sabotage the work that they did on the catapults.
In a home game, absolutely.
That would be awesome, yeah.
But in an encounters game, I think that, you know, especially with younger or inexperienced players, they might see that as kind of a cheat and feel that you're just picking on them. Ah, man, we made those good rolls, now we got to do them again. But yeah, but in a home game, I would do that in a heartbeat. And my players would probably expect that in a home game, and they would take measures to ensure that that didn't happen.
Well, that's what I'm saying, an extra skill check, right? You make sure somebody's on patrol, and they do a passive perception of this. Oh, you see a troll. Fight.
Yeah, exactly.
That's cool.
Yeah. So
What did you not specifically – a criticism, which is very minor in this encounter season to start off with, a criticism you had?
Well, as I said, I think that the 9 days was excessive. I don't think that we needed that. The other problem we ran into was that because the tasks required different lengths of time, some tasks were 1 day, some tasks were 3 days, if the party split up, which all of our parties did, the parties are then running on different cycles. So, for example, what we did with our group is half of the team A went to talk to the riders. That took 1 day. Team B decided to try and boost morale in the troops. Well, that takes 3 days. So on day two, Team A was ready to start something new. But on day two, Team B was only 2/3 of the way through their task. So you had 9 days, but now our Team A and our Team B were running on different schedules, and they couldn't get caught up. So essentially, I was on Team A with two other players. We could try and do stuff together, but we basically couldn't interact with Team B unless we wanted to sit around and wait for a day while they finished doing what they were doing. I would have really liked to have seen some sort of a mechanic where the tasks that required more than one day could introduce other players partway through to to add to it. So it's like, repairing the catapults takes 3 days, but on day two, when the big fighter comes back in because he's completed his task of whatever, you can put him to work lifting stuff or using some of his physical skills, and then figure out a way to work that in rather than just say, no, the people who were there are these are the only ones that can do the check. It
So,
takes 3 days, hands off.
like an aid another add-on of some type, and kind of an interlude, like, okay, well, you're done one task, and basically have at the bottom, well, if you're done another task, then when your group members can go to one of the other assets and try to aid another before they start doing their skill check.
Like normally an aid another is plus two. Maybe you make the mechanic and say the aid another in this circumstance is going to, like, I mean, we're already changing some of the basic rules of 4E D&D for this season. Why don't we say in this particular case, every day you work on it, you get to aid another, and if you're successful, it's plus one. And that way, if guys can only show up for day three, they can still try and help, but they only get plus one. Whereas the guy who's been there the whole time can potentially get, add a plus three on his assist.
Right.
And I wouldn't necessarily make him roll three times, or I would give him three checks and he takes the best one. Reward him for being there all 3 days. And that way, that way your team A and your team B can sync back up, and you can change the teams up again. And it's not like, again, not that I'm complaining that I was just with these two guys, but it would have been nice for my character to be able to hook up with one of these other characters to try a different task because our two skill sets synergized a little better once we realized we had new objectives to do. Again, it's a minor criticism, and it's something I might play with if I was using this in a home game, if I was, if I run it again or if I incorporate this. But there's still so much for everybody to do in this encounter, in this session, that it wasn't like people were sitting around with nothing to do. There was definitely stuff to do. It was just a matter of which parts could you do.
Right. And it was harder to keep track of time too, or maybe just make all the tasks the same amount of days.
Yeah, I thought of that too, but no, I actually liked that it said certain tasks were more difficult, so it did require longer. I just wanted a way to represent better that, if we're trying to recruit people to the army, it doesn't matter that I'm not doing it all 3 days. As long as somebody continues to do it, that's really all that should matter.
I'm glad there's no skill challenges though, per se.
Yeah, I don't think that a skill challenge, a traditional by the book skill challenge, would have worked in this regard. I think it would have made for a lot of unnecessary checks. I like that it's just very basic. Encourage the role playing. These are the skills we recommend you use. I mean, our DM, when I was a player, he even said, he goes, you have 2 days left and there's no tasks that require 2 days to complete. What do you want to do? If you can come up with something good, I'll give you a check, probably a hard check. And if you're good, I'll increase the battle value by one. So, like, I was playing a warlord. I said, okay, well, I walk around the town and I use my knowledge of tactics and I make maybe a history or perception check to try and figure out, like, what can I do? I talk to the leader of the riders. I talk to the leader of the archers. They know the town better than I do. They know the terrain better than I do. And he let me make a history check and I rolled natural 20. So I'm like, awesome. He's like, you increase the battle value by one. You're able to provide them with some insight they had overlooked or that they hadn't considered. And, the other characters, two or three of the other players did the same thing. They came up with these really great ideas. They made the check. They rolled amazing. Like, I like that it's that more of a free-flowing aspect to it this season.
Well, I'm not a big fan of skill challenges to start off with. There's probably one or two skill challenges that I've ever said, wow, that's awesome. Why? Because maybe the players I play with, they go in and they say, well, I rolled diplomacy. Okay, I got a 20. Next. And that really bothers me. So I've never had really probably a dynamic group that actually came up with a whole bunch of stuff. So in this case, you need to role play. And then you get the skill check as a bonus at the end. So I really like that. I really, really, really enjoy that there's no skill challenges.
In this circumstance, I agree, but my personal preference, I love the skill challenge for 4E. It's certainly, there are good ways to run them and not so great ones to run them, but that's a whole other discussion for another day.
Yeah, and I've never had a good one, so I'm glad they're not here right now, so.
So at the end of this, as we discussed, at the end of the session, if they haven't acquired the magic holy symbol, it should be provided because it's necessary for the following 2 weeks. Nesmi is either saved or not. And then where do they head to Silvery Moon at the end? I'm trying to think of where they head at the
No,
end.
they're heading to Blingdenstone after. They've
That's
basically
right.
defended Silvery Moon, right? They've defended
Right, right.
Nesmi. They've got the battlefront ready for Silvery Moon. So now they go on to basically Blingdenstone.
Excellent. So we pick things up there next week. So, I mean, I'll say it again. This was my favorite encounter so far this season. I had a great time running it. I had a great time playing it. I got a lot of ideas from this that I can and will incorporate into my home game. And I think anyone who came out to play this season, if they played this week six session, I'd like to think that they had a good time. If they haven't been enjoying it up until now, I think this is the one that would have turned the tide.
Very cool. Anything else to add?
No, I'm good.
Sounds good. Well, everybody, don't forget to take a look at slyflourish.com for the Lazy DM. It seems like a very good book. Derek, you've had a chance to look at it, and it seems really, really awesome. So go take a look at that. And basically, this concludes D&D Encounter Season 11, War of Everlasting Darkness, Session 6, Trolls of the Evermoors. And stay tuned next week when we do Session 7, Shores of the Dark Lake.
You can follow me on Twitter at @Amaron_DM, and be sure to visit dungeonsmaster.com for original D&D 4th edition material, including a weekly field report of my D&D encounters experiences.
And follow me on Twitter at 20foot and visit 20footradius.blogspot.com for your weekly dose of D&D encounters. That's 20foot radius 20ft radius.blogspot.com. Until then, have a blast.